Welcome to Day Zero Update for August 9th, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Sologi.
I'm Brandon Parkins.
And I'm Dan Red Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a big week of news as a bunch of companies decided they want to announce that they're releasing in September.
Mm-hmm.
Not having seen that the month is already full. There's no room, so they're gonna go for the fights and try and survive, I guess,
mm-hmm.
for that month, hoping that not everybody's tastes will be covered. So that's gonna be fun.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a bunch of industry news, as let's say things are not going great still. We do have some good bit of news, but not much else here, but we'll get to that stuff when we get to it. Before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I will kick off here. The main thing I've been playing is Restory.
Mm-hmm.
Officially, it's Restory Chill Electronics Repairs, but they don't even show that in the logo
mm-hmm.
for it, so I just call it Restory, which is the newest game from Tiny Build and Mandragora. And it is a chill simulator where you are repairing electronics in the early 2000s in Akiba, mm-hmm. which is part of Tokyo, Japan. You take over this repair shop that the old master has disappeared from, and you get signs early on that like maybe this is Yakuza related, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, you kind of get introduced to some of the main characters you'll deal with, like your landlord, the courier who mm-hmm. delivers stuff to you and from you. Like when you complete orders, he basically picks them up, drops off money, and then delivers it for you. And you meet a few of your more eccentric neighbors, like the guy that lives above you, who you call Bucket, because the only way he shows up is he lowers a bucket with little smiley face on it, on like a post-it note, to ask you to fix some things for him, which the first one is the Atari CX-40, which is the official name for the Atari 2600 controller.
Mm.
And that's the only license they have for this, the Atari license. So they're the only hardware manufacturer that they have more than two items from. Because they have the 2600, the controller, and the Atari Lynx. And so, yeah, as you go, they have a few licenses to work on things immediately. Then you start getting presented with some items from some of the various characters that are, going to show like a Noni PMP or a PSP, as you would call it. The some phones and a bunch of consoles, as well as you get to an Aibo robot dog kind of thing, as well as a bunch of other kind of random assorted electronics, like a Guitar Hero controller.
Mm-hmm.
What else you get? You get their version of the IBM ThinkPad laptop. So you get a good variety of stuff here over the course of the campaign, which I managed to beat in about 12 and a half hours, and that was mostly from me mainlining all the story items you need to fix.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause anything that the characters bring to you progresses the story along.
Yeah.
So if you want to just get to the end, that's the way to do it. But also you can take orders in from the internet through your email. You'll have a bunch of orders. You just click on, sort of similar like PC Building Simulator. You click on them and say hey, I'll take this kind of thing, and you definitely don't want to take a bunch of those because mm-hmm. they have a 3-day limit to fulfill them. And if you take too long. It'll be overdue. I assume you get some money penalty and maybe a hit to your rating.
Yeah.
As much like a PC building simulator, like every job you do, they rate you on your profile, which there are some like story bits to that stuff getting affected. You run into like a rival repair master who's very salty and like has you do a job for him and then rates you lower than everybody else. Just be a dick about it. Get some stuff like that. But also there's a marketplace that has a bunch of these, you know, devices being sold there. Some of which are, you know, in poor condition, some are in much better condition, and you can buy those to either prep for parts to put in your little box for that. Or you can, you know, buy the parts to finish them up nice and new and kind of sell that for a profit. And so it's worth kind of checking the prices and all that. I don't think they have anything that sells that's sold at a price that you would lose money by finishing it. But I have not done any thorough testing on that. I do need to just open up a notepad doc and like write down the sell prices for things, because they seems like the same price. I don't know if doing some of the extra stuff might raise that price, because you, much like in a PC building sim, you do get some upgrades that can, you know, make it quicker to unscrew screws from devices or brush off dirt quicker, that kind of stuff. You can do a little faster over the course of the campaign. You can also unlock things like an airbrush so that you can paint. So then you start getting jobs where they ask you to paint things. Often things that look pretty good, though it's usually giving you the type of paint, because they have them all categorized. So you get to pick within it, like there's like 9 colors for each of the types, so you get your choice of what color from there. But I've had like the jobs to paint Guitar Hero controllers, and these are the dual color, the red and black ones, and I'm like, it's just one color. Depending on, like, this is a crime, whatever's going on here. But they don't, you know, you do whatever the customer asks you to. That's where I had the one bug I've had, which is I got one of those that, one of the upgrades you get is, like, hacking tools that's mostly is used to, like, update firmware or, like, unlock devices. And it was giving me that for the guitar, but it couldn't, the software wouldn't recognize it. It would just say this device isn't compatible. And from then you couldn't submit this, finish this guitar, and nor can you like throw it out or send it back or anything to fix the job or whatever. And so it was like, that was like one of the only bugs I really had with the game. That's something they're working on a fix for, so hopefully that gets fixed pretty soon here. I think there's like one other device that has a similar issue like that. So, yeah, they're working on fixing some things, adding some accessibility options to the game, and, you know, dealing with the bugs and whatnot that they've gotten from people. But yeah, I've been enjoying this a lot. It's got a really good vibe to it, because, yeah, the time kind of keeps going throughout the day from 8 a.m. to midnight. You can just keep working on things and ordering stuff online and getting that picked up all the way up till midnight from the courier. Once you're past midnight, nothing you finish can be sent out until 8 a.m. So you can just, you know, shut the shutters on your window and just save and quit, or save and go to sleep, come back in the morning. Or you can't just hang out all night, and maybe if you've taken on a bunch of jobs or whatever things to work on, you can sit there and work on that stuff throughout the nights. You just can't get any mail in or out, which the The game does encourage, because there is an achievement for, I think, doing that for 7 days straight. There's no real punishment to any of that. It's just, you know, what you're doing with your time. It's not a game that rushes you through anything. It has achievements going all the way to playing through 365 days. Like I said, the jobs, besides the online jobs, the story related ones don't really have any expiration to them, even though the characters might say they need it done fast. It doesn't really matter.
Mm.
Even if it doesn't make sense in the story, when people need things fast or there's people missing or anything like that, you can just sit on it. It doesn't really matter. So you can just work on it in your pace, and that's kind of a really good part of this game. In the review, I kind of liken it to the Power Wash Simulator games and the American Truck and Euro Truck Simulator games, and that they're just kind of very good simulators that are very chill, because they emulate the best parts of those kind of jobs without, you know, making you deal with all the boring parts of them.
Mm.
And so that's kind of a lot of what you do here, is just pull these devices apart, you know, clean up the dirty parts, replace the broken parts, and send them out, get your money back, and figure out what you're, you know, going to do next. Whether you're going to save to buy more licenses so you can work on more devices, because, yeah, there's quite a bit here. Like, the only Nintendo ones they have here are the launch DS and the, I think it's a Game Boy, or maybe like a Game Boy Pocket, maybe Game Boy Color. I'm not sure exactly what that one is. There's like a Nokia phone and also the N-Gage. I think they call the Enjoy here. Sony's items are the PSP and the PlayStation. Xbox has the original Xbox and the controller. And I looked at like teardowns for some of these items, and they are pretty accurate to what the original devices were, which is cool to see. Maybe just take some liberties on things like the Atari 2600 has the screws on the bottom of it under rubber feet. They don't make you deal with rubber feet. And like the PSP has screws under stickers that are telling you if you remove it, you void your warranty. And it's like they don't have that kind of stuff in there.
Yeah.
And like simplifying some cables and such. A lot of minor stuff there. So it all kind of works out pretty well for what you really need to simulate when you're doing this kind of thing, and it benefits the game a lot. So I've restarted the campaign, because I just want to take it on my own time now, instead of trying to rush through it. I unlocked stickers as the thing I didn't touch in the campaign, because I just didn't notice it. You occasionally get people that want you to put stickers on their thing, which I don't know why you would, but there are weirdos out there that will want that kind of stuff. There's painting, there's soldering you get at some points. And yeah, you kind of have these characters coming along, giving you jobs for various things. And the story kind of comes to a head with some branching options at some points. So one point I was narking on all the people that were doing somewhat illegal things. To the cop that comes around every so often.
Mm-hmm.
And so like those characters disappeared for a long while. One of them was just providing me with boxes of parts to put in my part box, so that, you know, I might have spare stuff that I don't need to spend extra money on.
Mm-hmm.
So they just disappeared for a while, until probably near the end, when mm-hmm. I made the decision on what to do. And I think one of them probably leads you to a dead end based on what you do. And the other one, which is the one I picked, is the cool ending, the good ending. Mm-hmm. That essentially you get your shop back with all your stuff, and you essentially unlock endless mode.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of keep doing stuff without character showing up or anything, which is kind of a little disappointing. I'd like to see more of the characters. But otherwise, it's a fine ending, and that ending also has like the Wayne's World style thing of everybody talking about what they learned.
Mm-hmm.
At least for some of the characters, I'm like, okay, this is very Wayne's World-ish of where you're like, oh, I've learned this, and because I look like a Yakuza, this guy wants me to work on his series in the States. I'm like, all right, good luck with that, dude. Or I think it's related to like the Yakuza games or something, and yeah, you got a bunch of that stuff, and that's pretty cool. So yeah, that's only out on Steam, $20. They got a 10% discount right now, and they have bundles with a bunch of other games, so if you already have any of those games, you can potentially get an extra discount on top of that. So that's one I recommend checking out. I gave it a 4.75 out of 5, or also about a 9.5 out of 10. So I definitely highly recommend it, and it's probably one of my top games of the year.
Mm.
So that's been fun to play and continue playing. I did a stream yesterday showing off a bunch of it, so that'll be going up the archive probably today. So there's that. And the other thing I've been doing is playing some more stuff on my Superstation for retro achievements, and jumped into Super Metroid, and once I got it kind of working the way I want, I would say the controls are not great the way they're laid out, because it was like, what was it? I would have to hit circle to jump and triangle to shoot.
Mm.
Which maybe makes more sense on a Super Nintendo controller, but it was messing me up on a DualSense. But at a certain point, I was remapping that so that square was the shoot button and X was the jump button. And luckily, it's like one of the few Super Nintendo games that lets you remap all the controls. And so that was nice. That's a game I've never gotten far into. I just always kind of run into some point that I lose track of what I'm doing and just like save and quit and like oh, I'll come back someday and never do. And this time I managed to actually not fall into any traps or anything. That got me to stop. So I've been playing a good bit of this game. I've beaten a bunch of the bosses now. I basically have the ice beam and the whatever the super bomb, the one you have to drop when you're in the morph ball form. So that's kind of where I'm at. Now I'm just running around the map trying to figure out what the next thing is. So I might just look up a guide to see if I'm missing something, which I probably am, because I've been around the map a good bit and I'm not sure exactly what the next thing is. I think I need some upgrade for my suit so I can hang out in lava a bit more. Because I tried to go through some lava. Luckily, I had like 4 energy tanks to get pretty far down this this area in this lava and realize I fucked up and got back up with like 30 total energy left. I had to slowly build it back up. So that's been fun, but nice to actually have gotten further into this game where I now have some momentum and a desire to maybe beat it at some point. So that's been pretty good. The things I don't like about this game is there's like secret moves, like a wall jump that is might be the worst wall jump I've ever seen. It does not work like every other wall jump, and I get that there probably wasn't very much in the way of wall jumps in this era when they were making this, but what they came up with is the wrong one.
Mm-hmm.
Because you basically have to jump with Samus, you know, flipping over up against a wall, hold the opposite direction from the way she's going, then hit jump, and that jumps off the wall, and it's such an unnatural way, especially when I've, you know, played 20, 30 years of other games that did it other ways, which is just you push up against the wall and then jump. You jump the opposite direction, like most other games. And so I've only ever really done it in the specific areas where you're kind of trapped and these creatures are somewhat showing you what to do. And I did the like super jump that you kind of charge from the speed booster. Then, and that again did not make any sense how it worked. I got an achievement for quote unquote learning how to do it. And I was like, I didn't learn shit. I just did it to get out of this fucking hole. And I don't know how I actually did it. So that's a fun thing. It's another thing they show you with just this weird creature doing it. And I just like didn't know exactly what it was doing other than running at your fastest form and then somehow charging it into a jump. It took like 20 tries to get it to work. So yeah, those are like the things I don't like about this game. Some of its secret stuff. There's a secret thing for the ice beam. Again, I don't know how I did it. So there's some weird stuff that from what little of guide stuff I've seen are pretty much described as like things you're probably not going to do, but it might be nice that you learn it. But yeah, so that's been what I've been doing. How about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I'm still doing Splatoon Raiders. I mean, yes, still playing Splatoon Raiders. I finished the main campaign. That's all done, so I'm doing the post-game stuff. Specifically, I'm trying to go through the what's called the Bottomless Buffet area, which has like 100 floors to it. And at the very bottom of it, there is the... Well, it technically has 100. It's actually technically endless, but there's a true final boss that you encounter after you reach... floor 100, after which the game can then officially end. So I'm trying to do that. After which I'll go back to playing Splatoon 3 again. Going back to that. Also on top of that, I'm also still going through my second run of Deltarune. I've managed to finish chapter 4 and the hidden boss for that one, which even though it was supposed to be like more difficult than the Roaring Knight was in chapter 3, actually only took me a few to get past to actually succeed. And I think that's partly due to the fact that the boss fight there is a bit easy to understand what it is you're trying to avoid compared to the third one, because the Roaring Knight, their attacks come like very fast and they're very varied and there's just a bunch of them and there's not really any time to like learn what their essential, you know, mechanics are, especially like the last big ones where it's kind of difficult to find out where exactly it is you need to be. But yeah, so I'm now on chapter 5, which, you know, I've already, you know, means I'm going to be going back and trying to get all the stuff I missed the last time around. And I'm also got another game that I'm playing. It's a secret game. I can't really talk about it right now. All I'll say right now is that, it's all right. It's all right. And, yeah, that's what I've been doing. So Darren, what about you?
Yeah, I've been playing a little bit more of Big Walk. I had the review up on Monday, and I pretty much just stand by what I said. Like, if you haven't heard of Big Walk, it's a game that came out from the same studio that brought us Until the Goose Game, and it is a multiplayer walk through a deserted island where you find stuff, you solve a bunch of mysteries through different puzzles, very much like something like The Witness, but a little bit easier, and obviously focused on cooperative play. You cannot play this game one player. You can go ahead and load yourself in, but you're not going to be able to do anything unless you have friends with you. The thing is, it'll scale between 4 and 8 players, and I think you can actually play a little bit more than that, but like once you get past 8, it's a little bit crazy from there. And I've only played the game with my brother, so I can't really speak about how much bigger the game is when you're playing with more than 4 people. But yeah, like what we played was definitely really solid. We got through like the main ending without spoiling too much. There is additional stuff that you can do after the first ending, so you can unlock the true ending, and that really adds like 8 hours of play to the whole thing. And yeah, it's a really rewarding experience when you go through the whole thing. Now, the main thing that I didn't talk about is that it's really reliant and insistent that you use proximity chat. And for those of you that don't know what how that works, basically when you're playing with a friend, you can only hear what they say when you're near them. If you're far away from them and you yell into your mic, they're not going to hear you. And they really insist that you don't play this game in the same room as your friends or whatever it may be. And like, if I were to be completely honest, we did try this out, but I didn't like it that way. Granted, you know, I am playing with my brother who lives in the same household that I do, but like a lot of my, you know, I don't really want to call it patience because like I do have the patience for this kind of game, but at the same time, it's like when I play a game where there is an obvious ending, like I want to get there. I understand, you know, the value of, you know, just wanting to stop by and smell the flowers. And I very much understand that a lot of the game was designed for you to explore these different mechanics through the power of communication. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, the main way to progress through the game is to solve puzzles. And, you know, you can go ahead and communicate with your partner that way. One of the more interesting puzzles in the game, funny enough, it's actually been talked about a lot in social media, is this room where you lock yourselves in and you can't get out until 5 minutes have passed. And you can go ahead and rummage your way through the room looking for a key as if you were in an escape room. But all you have to do is wait for that 5 minutes ends. You can sit down. There are mics there. You can go ahead and talk to each other. And a whole bunch of other publications have actually been using this opportunity to create more podcast content or turn it into a talk show, which I think is really, really cool. But at the end of the day, yeah, like, it depends on the kind of time that you want to put your way through on this. And the reason why I mentioned this is because, like, you know, I've been, a number of us here have been doing this for way more than a decade. I myself have been reviewing games for 20 years. And our review on Smashpad, which is a 3.5 out of 5 or a 7, which is a good score, you know, has finally got some hate. So I feel like I made it in the gaming industry with all the hate I've gotten with this review. A lot of our hits have come from Reddit. I have a private Instagram post on my profile of someone, well, not really private, like it's an open profile, but like it was a post about Comic-Con, and I have somebody in my comments just digging at me there. So it's pretty, it's been a pretty funny yet annoying experience. But at the end of the day, it's like, cool, we made it. But yeah, don't get me wrong. Big Walk is a fun game. I definitely did enjoy it. But because I only played with my brother, I did not get like the full experience. And, you know, I totally understand that you probably want to play a game the way developers expected you to play it, you know, the way they've intended. But at the same time, it's like, is The Odyssey actually better if you watched it in 170 millimeters or, yeah, in the best way in IMAX? You know, at the end of the day, it's going to have the same script. It's going to have the same characters. It's going to have the same visuals, whether or not you've seen the top or bottom of the screen and things like that. Like, if you were playing like The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild and you come to those puzzles where you have to use motion-based mechanics to get the ball into the hole and you go ahead and flip the map so that you can just go ahead and do it with minimal effort, you know, I don't believe in punishment for that. And at the same time, the developers at House would not have made the puzzles as open-ended as they were if they intended on you doing things the exact same way that they wanted you to do them. So yeah, that's definitely something that I applaud them for, and I enjoyed doing it. Moving on, I've been playing some Marvel Token Fighting Souls, code provided by PlayStation. So thank you to them. David will be working on the review. He's playing on PC and I'm playing on PS5. And yeah, I have been a part of every beta that this game has been available on, and I am totally enjoying the game. I am currently playing my way through the single player campaign episodes. I just finished the Avengers episodes, and now I'm working my way. I already forget what they're called, but the one with Deadpool. And really enjoying it so far. As far as the way the episodes are laid out, they do it in pretty much comic book style. So they'll lay things out page by page, frame by frame. It's pretty cool to see. But at the same time, when it comes to the more story-based anime cutscenes, they definitely have those there. They're all really well done. And, like, that was part of my appeal when this game was first unveiled at the State of Play last year, you know? Seeing Marvel characters done in an anime way is a totally awesome perspective to view it at. And at the same time, this is how our system works. The gameplay is pretty much as intuitive as you want it to be. Even though it is sort of a tag fighter, I don't really like comparing it to Marvel vs. Capcom, because when you start a match, you don't actually have the ability to tag right away. You really only unlock characters in your team as soon as you've knocked your opponent into a new area on the stage, or if they've done that to you. And then from there, you know, you can go ahead and use L2 to call upon your partners and use it in various ways with the various attacks to create different combos that way. It is fairly beginner centric, but as you start to go online and you play with people online who already know all the moves, it becomes super intimidating, because there are going to be scenarios where if you don't block yourself or you don't know how to counter, you might end up just watching you end up just watching your opponent just kill you with like two combos straight off the bat, because the way some combos work is that it'll take you immediately off screen, very much in the way that supers work in various other fighting games, and sometimes it can be really overwhelming. But at the end of the day, like, this is one of those games where I totally recommend just going through the campaigns first, finding your mains by going through all the practice modes, and like, they will reward you in a sense with like trophies and costumes and other things of the like, and it's pretty cool to begin with. The multiplayer is interesting. Like, if you were to open up your own lobbies, you can go into your own like third-person chibi arcade, very much like a lot of the ways the modern fighting games like Street Fighter 6 and Tekken 8 do their things. So yeah, Marvel Tokkan Fighting Souls is really, really fun so far. I have heard that the PC has seen some issues with getting online, but so far with PlayStation, I haven't been able to see such issues, so I'm having fun with that one. I've also jumped into Madden NFL 27. The game actually goes into early access at the beginning of this week, and the game fully comes out like Thursday or Friday, something like that. But if you signed up for EA Play Live, which is their super premium EA online service, you got access to the game on Thursday or Friday. I don't remember which day. But yeah, like, interestingly enough, I'm already having a way different experience than what I've had with college football during their early access. I feel like Madden feels significantly more refined and polished, except that there are definitely some things to learn. With Madden in particular, one thing that they've added, which I don't believe is in College Football 27, is timing-based catching. So the way it works is, you know, your quarterback will go ahead and throw the ball at the receiver. And the way both football games work is, you know, you have one button for a spectacular catch, another button for a catch on the run, and another button for a safe catch. And these buttons still exist, but now you have to hold the button, and then a meter shows up. And after you release the meter, it'll end up in red, yellow, or green. Red means you probably won't catch it. Yellow leaves it up to the stats or your attributes. And then red means you probably won't catch it at all. And it also takes into account the defender on the play as well. So if you're wide open, you know, you're probably going to catch it anyway. But if you were to use a timing-based mechanic and accidentally hit red, yeah, you'll probably drop that ball, which has really been a pain point for me, as well as a lot of other people who've been playing Madden and football games for years, because the main thing with the timing-based catching is that while it will put you at a sort of a skill advantage, you know, if you're not used to it, or if you're throwing bullets to someone, you know, less than 10 yards away, it becomes a little bit more difficult to do things. But the reason why you want to do it is because with previous games, you were totally reliant on the math and the algorithm of what things aim at. Because, for example, you'll have catches in traffic. You'll have, you know, just the regular catch attributes. And, like, you know, sometimes you'll see situations where the 50-50 balls you think should have gone your way, but they didn't. And this allows you to really have more control. But at the same time, you're forced to relearn the system. And again, if you're a veteran, it's not something you're going to be proud of. You're not going to be really happy to do. And the same thing happens with the pre-snap abilities. It's the same thing that they brought over from college football. You don't have the same button selections when it comes to making audibles or making adjustments both on offense and on defense. So that's something that can definitely use some time in the lab as well. Luckily, Madden has both Madden and college football have a really, really good skills trainer. And at the end of the day, it's like, you know, it's, you have to humble yourself with it. Like, even though we've been playing these games for more than 20 years, the main way to improve it is to, like, you know, just take things back from the ground up. And if you're caught in all these foundational properties that may or may not change, like, you're really only doing a disservice to yourself. But at the end of the day, a lot of things, the things that I've talked about, primarily the timing-based catching, is you're able to turn that off. So if you don't want to do that, if you don't want to use precision passing either, you can just go ahead and, you know, let the CPU handle that for you, and, you know, best of luck there. But yeah, however you want to play it. I haven't gotten into any of the hardcore modes with Madden yet. I've only been playing quick games. But the thing with Madden, especially compared to last year, is I feel like at this point, the game was really, really solid when it first came out as well. And I think it's even better now. The main thing, though, is that throughout the rest of the season, defense was sort of nerfed. And in my franchise online league, it was pretty normal for us to see games and like 50 to 44 and, you know, 100-point games because the defense just sucked. And so far in Madden 27, it feels like the defense is back. And one of the big reasons why I'm seeing that is, again, going back to the timing-based catching, because the timing-based catching is also happening for the defenders. Interceptions aren't as automatic as they used to be because you still have to use that time. Again, that being said, you can turn that off. So if you want things to go back to the way they used to be, which I haven't tried yet, go ahead and see how that works. But yeah, I'll probably have more when we're back on the show next week. I plan on having our review out the day before the game comes out on Wednesday, and we'll go from there. So yeah, really enjoying Madden. And then I've also jumped back into College Football 27. I'm doing the review for Temple of Geek, so I just wanted to make sure I got some more gameplay in, especially since they've patched the game a lot since. And the main thing that I've been working on was Dynasty Mode. Road to Glory is my favorite mode in college football, but I feel like there weren't really that many changes. And, like, you know, it's true. It's Road to Glory is very much the same as last year, with the exception of the way some of the high school features worked. One of the weird things about how that worked was you'd pretty much have the ability to quit practice and all of a sudden do them again to get your attributes back. I thought the game was actually, like, pretty hard, even on varsity mode, so I actually just ended up going back to freshman to make things a little bit easier on my player. My player is a version of Cody Rhodes, except, you know, he plays quarterback, because in WWE he's QB1, so that's what I do there. But I have tried a little bit with tight end, because they've added more positions that you can play. And tight end has been really dynamic because, you know, as they do in real life, tight ends act as a receiver and they act as blockers. And, you know, just playing with these different kinds of nuances really adds a lot of variety to the game. And even though it's unfortunate that, you know, you're not always going to be in complete control of it, because, you know, the quarterback is going to touch the ball every play. Not exactly the same case with the tight end, but I am liking the differentiation things that way. The main thing that I've been playing is Dynasty Mode, which I honestly haven't played with all that much since college football came back. But yeah, I am having some fun with it. It's just really, you know, franchise mode in Madden for the most part, except that you're looking at recruiting year round. And honestly, like, I'm not finding a whole lot of that stuff too interesting. The big thing that they're selling here is the expectations that the athletic department puts on the team. So, for example, if you're using someone like Ohio State, you know, not only are you going to be expected to participate in the bowl game or show up in the college football playoff, you're also, like, expected to beat your rivals and things like that. I'm using San Jose State. The expectations are a whole lot lower. They want me to sign a 3-star recruit before the season ends, which unfortunately I wasn't able to do. But other goals, like being able to hold my opponents to less than 30 points a game, has been interesting. As well as, you know, just qualifying for a bowl game, which we were able to do. So we did that in my first season, and I'm looking forward to seeing how season 2 goes. It's already started off a little rough because like half my roster jumped into the transfer portal, even though we won the national championship last year. So I was like, okay, cool. I got to start all over again. But that's really the beauty of College Football Dynasty, just being able to act on the fly based on the players that you have. And now that NIL is here and the transfer portal is here, it's a whole lot different trying to retain talent. So that's been an interesting thing as well. But to be honest, like, it's not as, even though it's intuitive, it's not as fun as I thought it would be. Like, one thing, for example, with College Football's Road to Glory mode, when you use a player, the main disappointment for me there is the fact that even though you have things like text messages and things like that, you don't actually like go to school. You're not actually doing a whole lot of social interaction. One of the things that they judge you on is being a online influencer, but it doesn't seem like there's any sort of high point with doing any of that stuff. And that's a little bit disappointing in that regard. So even though, you know, a third time is usually the charm, usually a lot of athletes find their groove in their third year. Out of the three college football iterations we've had so far, this is probably the one that I've had the least amount of fun with, even though the gameplay is still fine. But yeah, that's about it for me.
All right. So yeah, let's get to some news. And first off, an interesting bit of news out of Ubisoft in that they are celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Ghost Recon series. I guess the first part of this is that they are that they updated Ghost Recon Wildlands to sort of unlock the frame rates and resolution stuff for that, so that on the PS5 and Xbox Series X and S, it'll run better and look a bit better. Like, a lot of people were expecting like an actual full upgrade to the new consoles, but this is sort of what they get for the time being. So that's nice. Alongside that, they've also added a big piece of story content that they're calling Last Rites. I'm still fairly early in this game, so I'm not anywhere close to deal with any of that, but seems nice for that game being about 10 years old or so at this point to get some extra content there. I believe they've also unlocked some of the past, like, what would you call it? Like event DLC kind of stuff, like the Predator stuff they did a while back. That stuff is unlocked again for people to check out. I believe any content that might have been tied to that as well is available to buy. But they also have a bunch of free stuff you can get off the in-game shop, as well as, I think, like a PS Plus pack of some extra cosmetic stuff. So that's nice. There, I believe they've also said they are looking to do some more stuff for Breakpoint, and I think that would be next month, I think they said. But they also, if you go into the Ubisoft Connect app on PC, you can get Ghost Recon Future Soldier for free through there, and adding it to your library there. Though, from what I've read, the co-op connectivity stuff has been shut off, so it's basically just a single player game at this point. So if you were looking to play that with other people, seems like that's no longer possible for that. So there you go. And like, all the Ghost Recon stuff is on sale on all the storefronts, so they got some pretty good prices for that stuff if you have not checked those out. So there you go. Just some heads up with some stuff they're doing there.
All right.
And speaking of other things that have been added for free, the Quake remaster has gotten a new campaign expansion called Dawn of the Machine. That was made by Machine Games.
Yep.
So I believe, much like the Doom one, there's probably a storefront for mod stuff in there that people have made, and that should be another one that you can grab in there for free and check out and have some more Quake to play.
Yeah.
So that's one that was announced during QuakeCon.
It's amazing how these old shooters, like, still have, like, just because they're just so easy to mod and design for, they have this enormous, still have this enormous community around it.
Yeah. They made their, like, it made their games very modular. Basically from the start, because like the Doom had a demo essentially. It was just like the first episode worth of maps. Maybe the second one as well. It's like, all right, here's some Doom, and if you want to pay, you can get the other parts later. And not, you got some of the best parts of Doom.
Yep.
Free. So they kept doing that for a little while. I think at least until Quake 2 and Doom 2. And they said, what if we make them like every other game? And that's where they started falling off a bit in terms of popularity. With like a Doom 3. The Quake 3 was popular. It was very invested on the multiplayer stuff. So that's another thing you can check out. And the other thing we had is that Nintendo had a Fire Emblem Fortunes Weave Direct. To explain how the hell the game works. Because a month out, we kind of hadn't really gotten much detail on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's if you've never played a Fire Emblem game before, you know.
Yeah, though this one has a bit of a different framework to it.
A little bit, yeah, kind of.
Because the three houses, essentially, I believe you had to finish one house's story to try out the others. Whereas here, the four main characters have their own stories going on, but you can sort of pause on them and save your progress and switch over to the others and kind of play them in parallel. Kind of see what everybody's doing. Which is a good change of pace on that front.
Yeah, it basically means you don't necessarily have to like play the game like three or four times to get the whole story.
No, you just play all four stories at once.
Yeah, I actually really love that about it. You know, I'm someone that really enjoyed Three Houses, but I actually only played Dimitri's route. I never had the time to do the rest, and, you know, obviously doing them one by one, plus a DLC quest, just seemed a little cumbersome, but I feel like doing it this way makes it a whole lot easier to get into it. And then, like, the one thing that, or not even the one thing yet, we just haven't gotten there yet, was there eventually is a real story being told here. Although, funny enough, I don't think the real thing seems as interesting as what's going on with the other four heroes. But yeah, like from what I've seen so far, I was already sold. But like looking at what they're showing now from this direct, even though a lot of it was, this is Fire Emblem and this is how Fire Emblem works, there was enough in here to actually get me excited about it again. Not that I wasn't already excited, but I'm definitely more sold than I was, than I was 2 weeks ago.
So the one thing I was having trouble with just the name of the empire, the Dagdan Empire.
Dagdan.
Which I'm like, one that sounds like the fish people in Cthulhu, Dagon. Also, like, everything about them, they name some form of that. Which is like, learn when your name's not super great to modify for that kind of thing and just give them better names. But yeah, that was a weird thing. Yeah, because their first and founding king was Dagda. Of course, his empire is the Dagdan Empire. And the city is Dagsian. God damn it, just stop.
For the record, and anybody who's curious, this game does take place in the same universe as the Three Houses does, but it doesn't take place on Fodlan, which is where Three Houses took place largely. This one takes place in a different country that's got divided, that has like an ocean between it and Fodlan. And it has like a much more like sort of Byzantine, Greco-Roman kind of Iberian flavor to it.
Yeah, it's kind of set around this arena that they have all these fights in.
And, you know, it's obviously I'm incredibly excited because I've reviewed Three Houses. Anybody who wants to read my review, it's still on Smashpad, although it was a while, it was a hot minute ago. Obviously there were some things people were curious about. It's like, wait, why is there a nun that seems to have a pistol? Well, it is universe relevant, believe it or not. Because turns out that the world of this of Fodlan and the Dagnan Empire take place in has been dealing. They've been in kind of like a artificial technological stagnation for like a long, long time, due to whatever the Shambalans did like many, many centuries ago. And every so often, their old tech will just show up. It turns out that gun is one of them. And if you played Three Houses, you'll know that when you encounter the Shambalans, they also had like automatons, and they had like also like more advanced weaponry than that and stuff like that. And yeah, just overall, very excited. Absolutely cannot wait to play this.
Yeah, like to be honest, the main reason why I watched the direct was because I saw the gun and I was like, okay, I had to see the canonical reason as to why this works. And basically the gauntlets are shape-shifting items. So I'm like, yep, okay, relevant. So
yeah. And there's like a bunch of other weird weapons too that also, like, there's the lightning sword, which is actually a thing from Three Houses.
I remember that.
Yeah. Also there's more like mounts as well. There's like the giant not chocobos that you can ride around on. There's horses, there's pegasi, there's wyverns, there's even a chariot class.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about the new classes too. They unveiled the dragoon class. I don't think that was in any previous iteration of the game, so
I want to say that there were characters that rode wyverns. But I don't think it was a particular class.
Yeah, they definitely resembled, you know, a bunch of dragoons from other games, definitely. But like, I don't think like anybody ever straight up called anybody a dragoon. So,
right,
that's a cool thing there. And the main struggle for me, and I don't even really want to call it a struggle. It's just something that I don't really prefer. Is that, you know, I'm an old school Fire Emblem player who enjoyed the weapons triangle, which has pretty much like been rendered useless, with the exception of Engage, where they really brought it back. It really added a sense of strategic play that I still use, even though it doesn't really matter. Like before, you know, swords bested axes. It's not really the case anymore. It's really more about looking at their overall stats. But, you know, that was just something I wanted to mention.
Not entirely. There are, you know, it's still a thing where, like, depending on what class you are, your weapon, whatever you're using will definitely be stronger against certain classes. Like, you know, anybody who wields magic is stronger against heavily armored enemies. Anybody who's...
No, it's not really the classes thing. It was just the way the weapons triangle worked. Like, I preferred the days of, like, you know, lances over swords, swords over axes, things like that. But as far as, like, magic working on armor or shooting winged enemies, you know, totally understandable.
Yeah. Like I talked about it when I did my review of Three Houses way back when, that basically part of the reason Three Houses ended up being so successful, I think, is it decided to sort of move past some of the stuff that had kind of made the older games a bit archaic. I would argue that the weapons triangle could arguably be one of those things. Mostly because they ended up throwing in a bunch more elements that the previous games didn't do. That said, I can absolutely see why some people would kind of be upset against them not having the weapons triangle thing, because a huge part of Fire Emblem's identity was specifically that weapons triangle. Like, all the simulation RPGs that came after it had something that they got, basically took that idea and sort of adapted it to their own. Like Final Fantasy Tactics did the same thing. Tactics Ogre did the same thing. All those games sort of took a bunch of their ideas from Fire Emblem.
I've grown to like make it, it's not really that much of a deal breaker for me anymore. But the main thing that I still strive to do, even though it also is no longer a factor, is the whole idea of permadeath, which you can just turn off. But at the same time, it's like, now that I've like reached a point in my life where I just want to like finish games, I'll probably turn it on. So
yeah. We also got to sort of talk about the fact that people kind of thought that Nintendo was spoiling like a big twist or something in the game when you find out like who you're actually playing, more or less. Which is, I forgot what their name is supposed to be, but they're basically the Pale Raven.
Yeah, that's what I talked about with the whole real protagonist and whatever it may be.
Yeah, which to be first and foremost, I would not be surprised if that isn't. I'm pretty sure that's how the game is going to start. That you end up starting at the beginning where everything is in ruins and you end up getting summoned down and, you've got to like figure out what it is you're going to do going from there. I would not be surprised if there's like this huge other twist that comes later. Maybe not. Maybe it's possible they'll even do a time skip like they did with Three Houses.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, like, this actually might even be that.
Yeah. And it seems clear that at some point the real protagonist like steps in at certain points and can actually like change certain events happening or something like that. I don't know. There's just a lot of neat stuff that they're implying that I can't wait to get into.
Yeah, and like, I sort of agree that it pretty much is in spoiler territory, and I probably would have enjoyed that more, like seeing it as a result. But at the same time, we've seen a lot of instances, especially with JRPGs that have come out recently, that a lot of people who play through them aren't actually playing through them, and they aren't playing through it enough. And as a result, it also like affects, their overall thoughts on the game. Like, the easy example for me is Adventures of Aloy. Like, that game has three endings. The first ending is very, I don't want to say disappointing, but like, it's not really an ending, and like, that point should have been obvious. But yeah, like, I really do think games like Fire Emblem can benefit from telling people, yeah, there's more to it than that, and maybe not show their entire hand, but for all we know, Nintendo didn't even do that. Like, there could definitely be more.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, there you go. You look at Fire Emblem. And your next look at things is Grand Theft Auto 6, as they have a new what they're calling like an extended look video that will be going up on Netflix on August 27th, about 6 hours ahead of YouTube and elsewhere. People have been getting furious about this for I don't know what reason, really. Because here's the thing, it'll be on Twitch. People will co-stream this on Twitch and YouTube as soon as it's available.
Like five, like and like I bet you 5 minutes after this thing ends, there's going to be a bunch of bootleg versions of it up on YouTube, like immediately.
Yeah.
You won't have to wait the 6 hours, I promise you. You
Yeah.
will find a way to watch it.
Yeah, and like, you've waited like 10 years. What's another 6 hours? Not the biggest deal in the world. At the end of the day though, like, this is great for Rockstar. Like, I read somewhere that this is a $100 million deal. Great. If it ends up with no layoffs when it's all said and done, I'm all for it. But the one interesting thing for me is Netflix has games. Netflix does have the other GTA games. I don't know about five. That does have the other GTA games on the service. And if you have a Netflix account, you have access to Netflix games at no additional charge. And if Netflix is like, cutting a deal to somehow make it day and date on Netflix games, this could be huge. The game starts at $80. Most people are going to spend $100 on it for the extended or real edition version, whatever you want to call it. And even though we've seen Netflix raise prices for the longest amount of time, this is still technically a way to save on it if they decide to put it on the service. So that's definitely something to look out for.
Yeah, I don't think they're doing any of that. But yeah, this is basically just Netflix getting their brand out there to associate with GTA 6, because that is going to be the biggest selling thing that we've seen in a long time, especially for launch, the way that people are talking about this. Like, could be in the tens of millions of units sold for the launch, which is ridiculous. And if Netflix wants to give Rockstar and Take-Two free money to have it on their thing for a few hours, they'll take it. Because that's free money.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. That's the thing you can check out here in a few weeks before you decide whether you're going to buy it or not. So, I feel like anybody has figured that out already.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like you've been going the last few years being like, I don't know if I want to play this game. I don't know what's going to happen in this GTA. It'll be like all the other ones. So there you go. But yeah, we also got some games getting dates here. We got Crimson Moon that is going to be launching on September 1st for PS5, Xbox, and PC. This is sort of an action-adventure RPG. Yeah, it's like a $20 game where, yeah, it's set in like the fallen city of Gilden Arch. In a gothic high renaissance action adventure RPG, so got some neat stuff here. And yeah, you play the form of a Nephilim, a half human half angel hybrid, forged to defend humanity from hell using supernatural powers, weapons, and melee combat abilities. So yeah, seems like one of those kind of games. I don't think it's a Souls like in any way. Just more of an action adventure thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a bit more in the Darksiders kind of vein to it all.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be nice, because that's a type of game we don't really get much anymore.
No, we honestly don't. I miss it.
Yeah. So yeah, that's one you can check out here on September 1st. On the 2nd, Moonlighter 2, The Endless Vault will be hitting 1.0. Will be available for, I think it's PS5, Xbox, and PC and Switch 2. You can check that one out. They'll be putting up the last bit of content that has. And yeah, that might be one I check out because I like the original a lot. It's sort of a roguelike dungeon crawler kind of thing where you're getting materials and such to sell in your shop.
Mm-hmm.
And as you kind of make more money, you buy more things, more upgrades for your shop, and all that, and ways to make yourself more powerful to survive the dungeons a bit more. And yeah, seems like they got some more stuff here, as it's a bit more of a 3D kind of style to it. So that looks pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
That's one you can check out. And then on September 4th, we have this game called Isle of Reveries.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out for the PS5, Xbox, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC on September 4th. This is a Zelda, Legend of Zelda inspired sort of action adventure game, with the style being kind of like a little bit more advanced than like a Game Boy Color style thing here. You can also play with co-op. With somebody else helping you. I'm not sure exactly if you're playing another character or if you're playing the fairy that you have going with you. But yeah, that's a rare one of those that lets you have some co-op stuff to do there. So that looks pretty neat. So there's that. Then on the 29th of September, Tome 2 will be out. The first game was a really good kind of photo-taking adventure game where you explored these areas, figured out puzzles, and helped do quests for people, getting pictures and all that kind of stuff. And they're doing a new one of those. And yeah, that still looks really good. PS5, Switch, PC for this at launch. So yeah, that's one I'm very interested in. It seems like the original game is on sale at 90% off on PS5 and PC, so if you've not checked that out, that's one to check out.
Mm-hmm.
And then last up here for our dates, Minecraft on the Switch 2. We knew that was going to be happening.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't know exactly when they were going to be doing this upgraded version. And now we have a date, October 27th. So that if you own the game on the Switch, there will be Yeah, digital upgrade path. I'm not sure if they've released details just yet. I assume it would be free, but maybe Microsoft and Poyang have figured out a way to make you pay for more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe added some new stuff. I don't know. But that could be neat. There. So yeah, that's a one to check out. We have more details as we get closer to launch, but yeah, that's good. And yeah, anything here you're looking forward to, Brandon, on the date stuff?
I'm gonna have to look a little more. Yeah, Crimson Moon looks cool, but the other stuff I'm gonna have to see a bit more before I, you know, I'm really excited.
How about you, Danner?
For me, it's really just Toem 2. I really enjoyed the first one, but it's something about me where black and white games don't really hold my attention for all that long, and even as good as the original one was, so it'll probably take me longer than most. And there is a bit of interest in Moonlighter 2, but the fact that we've already seen it in early access for as long as we have doesn't make me care as much.
All right. Let's get to some industry news, and if you've been wondering how Rockstar has been able to take their sweet time making GTA 6, we found out that as of the most recent fiscal report from Take-Two, that GTA 5 has sold over 230 million copies, which is a ridiculous number.
That's like... throw in like that you like that's like 2/3 of the population of the United States. that's how many people that is.
Yeah, that's I believe about as much as the Wii and the DS sold in that generation.
Mm-hmm.
Like if all of those people bought a copy of GTA 5.
Yep.
Statistically, a bunch of them did.
Yeah.
Not for those platforms, but
mm-mm.
Yeah. So that is ridiculous. I know still sell some more copies while people wait for GTA 6.
Yeah.
What else are you going to play until then?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's ridiculous. And yeah, that's about half of what the entire franchise has sold. They said it's sold about almost 475 million units globally.
Mm-hmm.
So literally about half of that's for one game.
Yep.
Granted, one game that's been sold for three different generations.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a whole thing there. So yeah, that's your Rockstar news. They have a lot of money.
A lot.
But let's get to some Sony news, and technically this is probably more Amazon news. They've been working on the God of War show, but unfortunately Ryan Hurst, who was set to play Kratos, suffered an injury and tore his bicep, so he's going to be out to the point that they are just going to recast Kratos for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And they might have lucked into maybe a better choice, that it seems like they are talking to Dave Bautista about playing that role.
Yeah.
Which he is at least part Greek ancestry, so certainly fits that and has the body for it.
Mm-hmm.
As a guy who has largely been a big man for much of his life, and all you'd really have to do is paint his head for this role, largely paint his head and body.
Mm-hmm. And everything. Yeah, I love Bautista. You know, I'm a huge wrestling fan. He's Filipino. I'm all about that life. But at the same time, I don't know if I really care about this casting choice. To me, he doesn't really look like Kratos in the game, but also I don't really have that opinion of Ryan Hurst either. But at the same time, it's like, you know, as I was following more of Ryan Hurst, I was really, really excited for him. So it's really unfortunate that this had to happen. But at the same time, like, you know, obviously Dave Bautista is a huge Hollywood actor, and that's a huge get. At the same time, it's like, with the way I feel about Sony as a company right now, I love seeing them waste all their money. So that's how I feel about that.
Yeah. But yeah, being an Amazon Prime show, not many people are going to see this either way. Which has been the case for most of their shows. Like Fallout's been one of the few that's really broken out, but even then, I think the season two did not get as much hype as season one. Now they're working
on
season three.
There are a bunch of things I've really enjoyed on Prime Video. Totally separate conversation, but at the same time, it's like, I think they're hitting the right audience. You know, as you mentioned, like Fallout is something that's taken off. Both Invincible and The Boys are, you know, they've also sort of trudged their way into mainstream territory. And God of War could very much do the same thing. Like, as far as, like, who they want to go ahead and get, they can definitely do that. But, you know, as far as, like, getting mass audiences, that's really hard for TV nowadays. It's even hard for Netflix, and they started the whole
thing. Yeah. So there's your news on that front. Let's see. For Xbox, we knew that they were increasing prices, but we had only seen prices for the U.S. We found out what they are looking like in Europe, and boy, not great. Let's see, the 512 gig Xbox Series S is going up 150 euros from 349 to 499. The 1 terabyte Series S going up 200 euros from 399 to 599. The 1 terabyte Series X disc is going up 200 from 599 to 799. And the Series X digital is going up from 599 to 749 euros for those prices. Which is a huge jump there. UK also having some similar price increases for that. So, yeah. Maybe the one caveat to this is that Microsoft wasn't really selling these consoles over there in huge quantities. I've seen a bunch of people saying they have not seen them on shelves in quite a while. So. These might be more for the online ordering crowd versus people finding them in a shop somewhere, which would not be a huge surprise for them. So, yeah, they're going to continue not selling many of these in Europe. So that's some of your Xbox news here. But yeah, we got EA news. They're officially owned by the Saudis and Jared Kushner's private equity firm.
Yep.
I believe they're talking about having to, I wonder if it's mentioned here, something like shed $700 million of yearly expenditures, and like there's $170 million, I think, of that that is described as what is basically employee salary. So people are expecting layoffs sometime in the near future, which will be a shame to see. But yeah, this is not going to be a great time for people that are working at this company that are probably pretty conflicted about what all this is going to mean for them. They want to see what it means for just what sort of games they're working on, because I could easily see this just being like, ah, they work on the stuff they've already been making yearly and occasionally putting out a Battlefield or whatever, but not really leveraging, you know, their studios for new IP or anything of that sort, kind of just playing it safe on things, which would be a shame, but that's kind of what EA's been for the last few years at this point, not really taking too many risks outside of Skate free-to-play game. So, yeah, be a not great time to be at BioWare. Working on a new Mass Effect that's nobody really knows what's going to happen with that. And yeah, be fun times.
Yeah, and like that's like the whole story with this whole thing. Like nobody knows what's going to happen. The biggest deal that I see regarding this whole transaction or purchase is the fact that EA actually goes into more debt as the result of it closing. And you know, they've already said that they'll be paying for it with profits, which means that as far as creativity goes, maybe it goes out the window, primarily because, you know, as far as EA's main money makers, it's always been the sports titles, as well as, you know, The Sims and maybe Star Wars. And yeah, like you're not gonna see a whole lot outside of that. But at the end of the day, it's like nobody really knows what's going to happen here. The most obvious thing would probably be layoffs to continue to cut to that bottom line and reach the reach that debt gap faster. But yeah, like a lot of the people that I know who are still with the company are just up in arms with the whole thing. They're not happy and they're not sad either. They're just like waiting for direction and who knows where that will go. Obviously we had that report, a couple weeks ago about Andrew Wilson pocketing $38 million, which was probably mostly a result of, Battlefield 6 hitting all of its goals, even though they've went through a huge layoff in March. So that's pretty slimy too. And yeah, it's really sad to see. You know, it just goes back to what I said, you know, a few weeks ago, a few months ago, as a former employee myself who had my own layoff. I just hope the people who are still there signed up for ESPP so that they stood to gain something. But yeah, like at the end of the day, this is not really something to be excited about. But I also wouldn't say it's all doom and gloom either, because, you know, when you have new ownership, they're going to try to find a way to be as attractive as possible, whether it be with its employees or with its fans. So, like, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, assume there's no Mass Effect out the gate yet. That's probably going to be like one of the main priorities outside of the big money making titles. But obviously, as we've seen with a lot of companies such as Pixar, it's like Pixar has been making a whole bunch of bangers, but they're still laying off people too, because, you know, nothing works anymore. But it all just remains to see.
Yeah. So yeah, we got a also got this story that Devolver Digital wants to do the same thing, but also not to questionable ownership. Devolver Digital, a while ago, I forget when they did this, they went public with an IPO that seemed to do pretty well, but that has dropped quite a bit since then, because, you know, being an indie publisher is not a consistent money-making business. So the people running Devolver Digital essentially want to delist from the alternative investment market on the London Stock Exchange and become a private company again. So yeah, seems like they claim this move is in the best interest of their shareholders and will result in a proposed return of capital of up to $5 million in cash, qualifying shareholders and holders of depository interests. And so yeah, they would supposedly cease trading on AIM on September 16th. And as they say, your Devolver said public trading has resulted in a quote-unquote valuation disconnect as a result of disruption and volatility across the video game industry. Basically saying, like, we'll be a better company if we stop being beholden to shareholders versus doing what's best for our business. And so, yeah. Seems like it's fallen. Their share price has fallen by 91% over the past 5 years, which is, not surprising for a company that doesn't have, you know, yearly bangers that will make a bunch of money for them and their shareholders.
Yeah. To be completely honest, I had no idea this company was publicly traded. And it really had no business being that way. Primarily because, like Chris said, they don't really have an IP. You know, all they do is like make creative and original stuff, which is what you should be doing. But if you're going to be a shareholder and you're going to invest in something, you want to have like some sort of bread and butter thing. And that doesn't exist here. So, you know, it's hard to really tell what the value would be. Obviously, when they first opened in, I don't know, I guess 2021 from what it says here, you know, they started out at 81 and then they went as high as 214 and they're down to 6 now. That's very bad. That closes down places. And obviously, as an indie developer, as an indie publisher, you don't want that to happen because you wouldn't have any more product. So, yeah, hopefully they're able to get what they want. And yeah, this is definitely alarming.
Yeah, we wish them the best. With all that, we do have one developer here that's not had a good time, Midboss, which has filed for bankruptcy, apparently with over $800,000 in debt.
Yeah.
The studio that made 2064 Read Only Memories Also has a lot of baggage to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were run by CEO Matt Kahn,
mm-hmm.
who then was forced out of the company or forced to step down as a result of abuse and sexual harassment accusations mm-hmm. from staff there. And yeah, that seemed like he, yeah, the Cade Peterson stepped in as interim CEO. Kahn owns 40% of the company, so kind of can't get rid of him and just make him step aside. But Cade Peterson remained a CEO until 2025 when he seemed to have quietly left the company, and Matt Kahn essentially weaseled his way back in to running it. So yeah, which is not great, but they do list a bunch of like debts here that they have. Like, they only have $2,500 in assets and property, while it owes $823,000 to creditors.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that's listed across four separate loans. Bunch is owed to one individual's revenue share. Royalty shares are owed to around a dozen individuals. There's also credit card debts. Disputed equity claim that covers about $400,000 of that money, as well as, like, repayment and such to Matt Kahn himself and all that. So yeah, not a great time for them and likely to be the end of them. So there you go. Maybe we'll be done with this guy for a bit.
All right.
So there you go. Then we do have some more Xbox news because, you know, they just finished a Halo game. Halo Studios has laid off a bunch of contractors. Essentially just ended their contracts
mm-hmm.
because they're done making a game. So why need the contractors anymore? So yeah, that's a fun whole thing. So yeah, it seems like no full-time workers have been laid off. Just those that have been, you know, working on a contract basis. Though that also includes people that have served multiple contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a fun, fun bit of news there. So you can add these people to the 1,600 that are being laid off over the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Although we don't know the specific amounts of this particular layoff, but yeah, that one's not surprising. That's one of Microsoft's favorite things is signing people to contract business and laying them off when they're done with them. So there you go.
Not to like demean anything, but do contractors count as part of their 3,200?
I would assume so, but maybe that's the tricky part of their numbering.
Yeah. But yeah, this doesn't surprise me one bit. You know, Halo Studios is bigger than we think, but at the same time, a lot of their employees are not actually beholden to Microsoft because they do have contracts, and like a lot of people I know aren't there anymore, so... Yeah, that's the main reason why it didn't surprise me. Plus, as Chris mentioned, the game came out. You know, game comes out. If you're not needed and you're not going to work on the next one, you're probably somewhere else.
Yeah. And then we still have some more Microsoft news because King is in the news because they apparently have declined their staff's collective bargaining agreement after a year of negotiations. Much for, you know, Microsoft not trying to shut down any union stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as the report says here, they told staff the decision was not made lightly. The reasons are twofold. First, President Todd Green here reportedly said the company's current benefits offering is better for our employees, mm-hmm. in areas like long-term sick pay, parental leave, private health and health insurance, and enhanced pension. Second reason is that King believes it's quote, current operating model is the right fit for King, including our operations in Sweden at this time. The company president says that entering into a collective bargaining agreement would require significant changes to how we operate in Sweden, including our processes, policies, and ways of working. Which I feel like is a common corporate thing. Like, oh, we'd have to change way too much about how we do things
mm-hmm.
to allow you guys to have a union. But we just can't be bothered with it. Yeah, they mentioned here any eligible Swedish worker You can join one of the several trade unions that represent their field at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Those trade unions then negotiate broadly within their sectors over working conditions. If enough employees within a specific employer desires to, they can form a union club at their workhouse, their mm-hmm. workplace. This allows the group to elect a union board to negotiate a collective bargaining agreement on their behalf with the employer, but said agreement can be rejected. Employers are required to negotiate in good faith, otherwise rejection could open the company up to potential collective action by employees to pressure the company into reconsidering. And yeah, it's currently unclear whether or not the employees are considering that, so we have to see more details from them, but not a great time for that. So yeah, there you go for that. That bit of news, there's a lot more, or there's a good bit more information here mm-hmm. on some of that stuff, but yeah. That's not surprising.
No. So, who here's betting that there's going to be a strike action soon?
Maybe. So yeah, there you go. And back onto the Netflix news. The team that worked on FIFA World Cup, Refactor Games, has laid off 85% of its workforce. That game launched just about 2 months ago. So that seems like they extracted all the money and laid off all the people so they don't have to keep paying them for whatever money that made for whoever's left, which I assume are mostly execs at that company, which is sad, even though the game not very good from what I've heard. So yeah, that's an unsurprising thing for that kind of game.
Mm.
This kind of like mobile-ish kind of game that's launched for just one event, essentially. So yeah, I'm not sure if that game's going to continue to be available, but I wouldn't be surprised if it gets shut down pretty soon. So yeah, there you go. More fun news. But yeah, I wanted to give everybody a little bit of good news. Here at the end, we talked about that game industry hardship bundle on itch.io last week that launched. I'm going to double check it now. Okay, yeah, they've almost raised, this is higher than when I looked at it yesterday, it's now almost at $200,000.
Damn.
It's at $198,000. It was at like $187,000 yesterday when I checked.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's almost at $200,000. Their current goal is at $250,000. And yeah, so people have been supporting that, putting some money in. I think the minimum is $10. You can put more in if you want for that, but yeah, it is really good to see this doing well for that. So yeah, definitely a way that you can help out those that have been affected by the layoffs and whatnot, because yeah, this is a hardship fund that's been created by the United Video Game Workers Union that they launched on July 6th, and yeah, this helps provide some extra funds for people that need it. So yeah, something worth looking into. You get some pretty good games here that are worth checking out, and get to help some people in the process. So
mm-hmm.
it's well worth doing if you can. So they're available for another 4 days. What day would that be? I think I would be, let's see, either Thursday or Friday, somewhere around there. That's worth checking out. So yeah. Have you have anything to add on any of this stuff here?
Not really.
Yeah, other than it being a huge initiative, definitely good job on them. Itch.io is also like one of the few places that does digital storefronts correctly. So there's really nothing bad here.
Yeah. So yeah, that's went on that bit of good news here. So thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about as August continues to ravage everybody across the country. I'm looking at what's coming out this week. Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion Remastered coming out on the Switch 2, and people, I think there's some early footage of that. That makes it look like a game that launched roughly on the Xbox and PlayStation and PC, and is probably going to do the same on the Switch too.
Yep.
We got Grounded 2 coming out in early access on the 11th. Akatori hits PS5 and Xbox. Dusk Fade comes out on everything on the 13th. Rivage, PS5 and Xbox and PC. Skate Steer on PS5, Xbox, Switch 2 and PC. And Wild Blue Skies on PS5, Xbox and PC this week. So, decent amount of stuff to check out for that. So, yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know. They should check it out and select strangers who are also willing to get some cool games to help out people in the industry. Let's see. I think that will do it. So, yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.
See ya.